You're listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney. This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast talking about the Vuelta a España. I'm with Daniel Freeb. Evening, Daniel.
Good evening, Lionel.
Whereabouts are you?
I am perched on top of a castle, almost literally perched on top of a castle, Lionel. Can you believe it? I'm staying tonight in a castle, the Castilla de Maceda, which is close to Ourense, close to where the Vuelta started, actually. We've done a huge circle, and I'm getting a bit of sort of Stockholm syndrome, and we can't seem to get out of Galicia.
Daniel Freeb, the king of the castle. I'd expect nothing less.
It's turning into a bit of a Kafka-esque experience. We just cannot escape this region of Galicia, but I don't particularly want to escape because it's been a fantastic few days here. As I have said on a previous occasion on the podcast, the landscapes have been absolutely sublime, and in fact the view from the Castillo de Macheda is truly spectacular. I think we finally leave tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, Galicia. Anyway.
Well, you were supposed to be joined this evening by Richard Moore, but Richard had a bit of trouble with his flight. I think it was delayed a bit today, and that put him behind, and then he was chasing to catch up. He's not made it, so we've had to draft you in at very short notice, so really appreciate that.
Don't make it sound like I'm a second choice, Lionel.
Third,
like
I thought.
Like a backup option. No. Anyway, go on.
Well, you weren't the plan. This wasn't all sorted out. You know, this wasn't planned on the Google Sheet, the Dropbox, was it? We're having to busk it. We're having to make it up on the hoof. But Richard will be there from tomorrow, covering the Vuelta for a week. But let's talk about today's stage six to Luintra, 163 kilometres. There was a handy breakaway which shaped the day. A former Tour stage winner, Jan Bakalans, was probably the most likely looking rider in it. But there was also Kevin Reiser, Laurent Didier, André Zeitz, Matthias Frank, Alberto Lasada and Omar Fraile in it. So plenty of horsepower, and they got away, and the peloton didn't show a great deal of interest in chasing them for most of the day, as is the norm. But they were brought back under control, and in the final 20 odd kilometres, Omar Fraile of Dimension Data got clear on his own, and he was then chased by Bakalans, Zeitz and Frank. By this point the peloton was just over a minute back. Fraile was caught, and then at the top of the climb Matthias Frank tried to go it alone, and that was a dangerous looking move because he was 8th in the Tour de France last year, so clearly a good climber, strong rider. But the peloton closed right back in on the descent, and on the final drag the escapees were caught and passed by Danny Moreno and then Simon Yates. And Yates of Orica Bike Exchange passed Moreno, and so there was this situation briefly where Yates was being chased by Moreno, who was being chased by Ben Hermans, but it was the Orica Bike Exchange man who was the strongest, and he held on to win his first Grand Tour stage, and he's certainly his biggest victory, not his first victory since he returned from that suspension that he was handed earlier in the year. We'll talk about that in a minute. No change overall. Darwin Atapuma is still in red. Gianni Miersman is in the green points jersey. Alexandre Geniez is the king of the mountains, and Atapuma is leading the combined classification, although Valverde will wear the white jersey tomorrow. Couple of abandons today. Miguel Angel Lopez, who won the Tour of Switzerland in June but crashed hard and broke a lot of his teeth on stage two, packed it in today, not surprisingly, as did Robert Kieselowski, who didn't actually start. He was one of the riders that was involved in a crash at the end of yesterday's stage. Tomorrow's another lumpy one, isn't it? A third category climb in the last 20 kilometres before a descent to the line, so it'll be potentially another stage for the breakaway riders. But Daniel, today's stage winner, Simon Yates, it was almost like he was proving a point after a lost summer, wasn't it?
Well, it did look that way, or you could interpret it that way. I mean, I asked him at the finish line whether he wanted to dedicate the victory to anyone. He said, well, I want to dedicate to myself because only I know what I've been through. He's not particularly comfortable talking about the doping ban, and unfortunately we do have to call it a doping ban. He was effectively almost cleared by the UCI. I mean, they sort of accepted that he the good faith that he showed in that, in the, well, it was asthma medication that he has been taking. Well, he's been taking asthma medication since about 2014, I think, and he usually takes salbutamol, which is allowed up to a certain threshold. On this particular occasion, it was around about the Paris-Nice time. Salbutamol was not quite cutting it in terms of his treatment. He was still suffering quite a lot, so he decided to change medicines, take something else, terbutaline, and that is a substance which does require a TUE, and Orica Bike Exchange said at the time that the team doctor had simply forgotten to apply for the TUE. So it does appear that Simon Yates was honest and did it didn't certainly didn't intend to cheat, but obviously he had to go through the ordeal of well, effectively being given a doping ban, and it will always be known as having had a, and having served a doping ban, which is unfortunate. But you know, he's certainly, as you would expect, very keen to move on from that. And I think, you know, it will soon fade into the kind of background noise that we always get in cycling. But you know, certainly an incredible performance, or a very impressive performance from him today. But not so impressive when you consider what his brother has also been doing over the last couple of years.
It must have been tough for him sitting and being aware, whether he was sitting watching the Tour de France in July or not, I don't know. But it must have been tough knowing that his brother was battling out for a place on the podium in the Tour de France while he was on the sidelines. And so, you know, today there was that clinical streak that both the Yates brothers do have. He picked his moment. It was timed immaculately, wasn't it? And you know, he wasn't trying to race away from slouches, was he? Danny Moreno is certainly no slouch, but he was strong and decisive when it counted. He, you know, really put the hammer down and made sure there was no doubting. And the way he sort of thumped his chest as he crossed the line definitely looked like you know, a kind of gesture of, look, I'm, you know, I'm back and I'm here and I'm taking part in the biggest races and capable of winning stages in them.
Yeah, and he's not a particularly emotional character, and neither of the Yates brothers are, but there was a bit of emotion today, I suppose, as you would expect. But their talent really is quite remarkable, you know, for such young riders to ride away from a group of such big hitters in a Grand Tour. I mean, we've had good example this week of the step up that riders are subject to in the in Grand Tours when they ride their first Grand Tour. And with Hugh Carthy, I mean, I spoke to him this morning, the Caio Rural rider, who's really been riding rings around some of the top climbers in the world on in smaller Spanish races, particularly this year, stage races. And he's really, really struggled on the flat this week in particular. And yeah, that's due to the fact that it is a real step up. And you know, Simon Yates has come into this welter, and this is his first Grand Tour. I think I'm right in saying. I'm sure I'm right in saying. In fact, and just completely unfazed by it, and not only completely unfazed, but nominally here to work for Esteban Chavez. And he's been telling us all week that he wasn't really thinking about stage wins and that he was only here for Chavez, but confident enough in his own ability to get on the radio to his direct sportif Neil Stevens 3 kilometres from the finish, or whatever it was, 4 kilometres from the finish, and ask him whether it was okay if he attacked. That was certainly the version we got from them tonight, that Yates was supposedly working for Chavez, but he felt so good that he wanted to give it a go. And yeah, and really made Danny Moreno, who's a very talented, quite decorated rider, look very, very ordinary.
Just correct you there, Daniel. Not Simon Yates' first Grand Tour, because of course he rode the Tour France, in 2014, and did a couple of weeks of the Tour de France, got in breaks, and he actually finished the Tour in 2015. But this is, you know, arguably the first chance that Simon Yates has got to ride and really make an impact. I know Adam Yates made a big impact at the Tour de France this year, but you know, the Vuelta isn't quite that same high level, is it? And this is an opportunity for him to you know, really put down some performances that people will take notice of. Just a quick plug for one of our Friends of the Podcast specials from last year, which is still available to listen to if anyone wants to sign up to last year's specials and get, I think it's 11 specials for a fiver. Can't say fairer than that. Go and check out thecyclingpodcast.com. But one of the specials we made last year was an interview with Adam and Simon together. I travelled up to Lancashire to meet them, and Daniel, you said that Simon's not a particularly emotional character. It can be difficult within the race situations to get much out of either of them because they're so focused on the racing, and they don't seem to be able to translate, you know, the kind of emotions that must be going through their minds when they're actually racing into words after a stage. But when I sat down with them, they really opened up a bit, and I got a much more of a sort of insight into their character, and certainly the drive that they both have to try and be the best that they can be. So if anyone wants to listen to that, sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. It will cost you a fiver, and there's, I think, 10 other episodes to take a listen to. Daniel, what do you make of Darwin Atapuma? We've seen he's held
tremendous
red jersey for a few days.
I think he's tremendous.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've spoken to him the last couple of days, and he's like a big cartoon character, or a small, very small, diminutive cartoon character. He reminds me a bit of Garfield, with these big kind of doe eyes, these big sort of sleepy eyes. And he tends to, when you interview him, certainly when you're interviewing for TV, he tends to look straight at the camera rather than at the interviewer, which is kind of unique. I'm pleased for him in the sense that he's been through a lot over the last year. His mum died, I think it was on the eve of the Giro d'Italia last year, and then had that stage in Corvara in the Giro when he was caught pretty much on the line, and he was very, very upset then. He was in tears at the finish line. And, you know, he's an odd fit in that team. And just speaking to some of the, Max Chandry, one of the directors, and Valeria Piva this week about where he fits in and how he fits in. And I think they're fighting a losing battle with his English. Somehow I can't imagine that he's ever going to be a particularly brilliant communicator in English, but they're slightly frustrated that he hasn't made more progress with his language. So they struggle with that on a daily basis, but he's certainly a very docile character and a very talented rider, and he's kind of the ugly duckling of this golden Colombian generation. You know, the 2010 Tour de l'Avenir, there was Chavez, there was Pantano, there was Atapuma and Quintana, and an ugly duckling only in the sense that he hasn't really had as much attention and as much coverage and as much hype as certainly Quintana and Chavez, and probably not quite as talented either, and also very different, a different beast in a sense. I mean, we tend to lump all the Colombians together, but Atapuma is a bit of an outlier in the sense that he comes from, comes from Ecuador. I mean, he hails from a place very close to the Ecuadorian border, so quite different, I think, from the others. And I don't think he's going to win the Vuelta a España. He probably is going to hold the red jersey for another couple of days, but, you know, he's certainly excited the Colombian fans, and there are a lot of South American immigrants and Colombian immigrants, I think, in this part of Spain, in Galicia. It's kind of quite well known for that, and we've noticed them at the starts and finishes every day. Only a handful, but certainly very passionate and very loud at times.
What about the Colombian media? Are they there in numbers at the moment? With obviously three riders in the top five, it's and it was the first Grand Tour ever won by a Colombian rider, wasn't it? The Vuelta, when Luis Herrera won, I think, in 1987.
Yeah, there are a couple of TV crews here, and we see them. We tend to see them nowadays, don't we, at Grand Tours? They are a presence, not a big presence, but they're becoming part of the furniture, aren't they, at Grand Tours? I mean, there are so many successful Colombian riders at the moment that they really have to be here.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. Coverage of the Vuelta a España is daily with Carlton Kirby and Sean Kelly. I'm sure everyone's watching on Eurosport. Other broadcasters are available, though, of course, aren't they, Daniel?
I imagine so. I hope so. I don't know, actually. Oh, yes! Gosh, yes, yes. Yeah. Sorry, yes, I totally forgot there. Yes, they are.
Anyway.
An English, British one. Particularly. Anyway, go on.
There is, There is. Anyway, looking at the stage win for Simon Yates, significant also because he has hauled himself back up into the top 10 overall. And when you look at the top 10, Peter Kennock maybe might slip away. Gianluca Brambilla might slip away. They're currently 8th or 9th. But the top 7 is looking pretty strong. Atapuma, Valverde, Froome, Quintana, Chavez, Samuel Sanchez, Leopold Koenig. Alberto Contador still has a little bit of work to pull himself back up from 12th overall. But Daniel, a week of racing almost done. And the overall classification has kind of crystallised. We certainly know who the contenders are going to be, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the real standout performers, as far as the GC is concerned, have been Esteban Chavez and Chris Froome. I mean, Chavez is always smiling, but he, this week in particular, he's been smiling like the proverbial, don't think they probably have Cheshire cats in South America, but I don't know what they would have. you know, if Atapuma is the big docile, I don't know, Garfield type figure, then I'm not sure what Chavez is, but he's always smiling, and he certainly was very pleased with Simon Yates winning the stage this afternoon, and he is brimming with confidence, I think, and he's really grown in stature since his performance in the Giro, and he's not missed a beat on the road, and he's always in the right position, and he's got a very experienced, well, a team that's experienced, has experience of riding with him. It's pretty much the team he took to the Giro, so he looks in really good shape. And Valverde and Quintana, it's the perennial question. They're both very good, but and between them, can they ally their forces to the extent where they're going to be stronger than a single, you know, better, superior individual, which might be the case. You know, maybe Chavez is going to be stronger than Quintana, and Froome is going to be stronger than Quintana, in which case, what do Movistar do? They have to play a tactical game, but that has not really worked for them in the past.
And, of course, the other thing is the stages are generally a lot shorter, aren't they? There aren't, you know, the attritional days that the Giro has, and there isn't the sort of level of competition that the Tour has. There won't be one team having a stranglehold on the race like Sky have at the Tour. And so it's a bit more explosive and a bit less predictable. It's almost a case of who will go pop at the wrong moment. It doesn't strike me that it's going to suit perhaps Nairo Quintana as much as it might suit Chavez or even Valverde.
No, and Quintana's record in the Vuelta so far has not been that great. He's had fairly mixed fortunes here. I think he'll be looking forward to the Pyrenees, but maybe less so some of the summit finishes, some of the very steep, punchy summit finishes, where, you know, Chavez seems to thrive, and certainly Froome, once he's got his sort of cadence as he would like it, and once he's hitting the right number of watts, and he decides that he's going to join the party. He certainly seems to like those climbs as well. So, Quintana and Valverde have got a lot of thinking to do. And, you know, even today, Movistar put a lot of pressure on at the front. And it looked like an ideal scenario when Dani Moreno went off the front. Well, it was certainly ideal in the sense that Movistar didn't really have anyone left to pull for Valverde. So the best thing they could do at that point was maybe counterattack and let another team take up the chase. But he wasn't strong enough to repel Simon Yates. So, you know, they're going to have to really think hard about how they use their resources over the next 2 weeks. And as I say, they've got practice. They've got experience now of trying to use tactics and use kind of slightly unusual methods and strategies to unseat Chris Froome. But it's never really worked until now. So they're going to have to try something new, probably.
Well, we've got a couple of days to wait to see how that all pans out. Tomorrow is quite similar to today's stage, a little climb in the last 20 kilometres. It's going to be the breakaway versus the peloton again. But then it's Saturday's stage, isn't it, which is a long drag and then a straight up a first category summit finish. And that is when we will see who is hot and who is not. But Richard Moore will be our man on the ground there with you, Daniel, over the weekend. He'll kick off his Vuelta tomorrow.
Now that you mention Richard Moore, Lionel, in the time-honoured traditional words of Richard Moore, shall we wrap it up, chaps?
Let's wrap it up, indeed. Yeah, just before we go, a couple of things to mention. If our Vuelta coverage isn't giving you enough to listen to, there are a couple of live events that Richard did in conjunction with our sponsors, Rafa. They took place at the Rafa Cycle Club. One is with the Cannondale Drapac rider Joe Dombrowski, who is riding the Vuelta, and the other is with Bradley Wiggins, who was pretty much fresh off the plane from Rio with another gold medal in his collection. Two great conversations, some great questions from the floor as well, particularly in the Joe Dombrowski episode. You can find those on our on our feed in all the usual places: iTunes, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, or our website, thecyclingpodcast.com. And lastly, if you do listen on iTunes and you want to leave us a review, please do so, because it does help us a lot. So that's it for today. I'm bowing out for a week. I'm heading off over to Spain. I'll join you in a week's time, I think, Daniel. So I'm hoping there's going to be some good seafood in Bilbao when I arrive. Did you enjoy the octopus?
Not really my thing, Lionel. I'm much more turf than surf.
Well, I know it's getting late over there in Spain. The restaurants do stay open, but I don't want you to miss dinner. So thank you very much and enjoy the rest of the race. I'll see you out in Spain in a week or so.
Wish me luck with the buffalo.
You don't need luck with the buffalo. You get on famously. Okay.
All right. See you, Lionel. Ciao, ciao.
Thanks a lot, Daniel. Bye.